I am robed in pink. And that is because I am female, and females are robed in pink. And from the time you leave the hospital on, it matters whether you are in pink or whether you are in blue. I have now disrobed, and I am blue. And I am blue because sport is blue. Sport primarily has been considered a male domain owned by males, for males, for building character, sportsmanship, the rite of passage vis-a-vis sport to male adulthood. Obviously then, the women must cheer them on as cheerleaders, and the girls, and the boys will be the quarterbacks. Theodore Roosevelt ordained it in 1904, saying we must keep football at Harvard and at Yale because we must make men. And there is something called the closing of the frontier safety valve theory. The safety valve theory in sport says that the closing of the frontier left no adventure for men. Therefore, that sport could be a substitute for adventure. Thus, the team sports and the great emphasis in our society on risk sports, on competitive sports, on body violent kind of sports. The second part of the theory deals with the military, and that is that sport can be a substitute for war. And as a substitute for war, the more violent it is, the less chance of war. Now, we've had football a long time, and we've also had Civil War, First War, Second War, Korean War, Vietnam War, and so Mr. Turner's theory may not hold. But there is something militaristic about sport, and consequently, maleness is the center. So the difficulty that we experience, I think, in life for little boys and for little girls is this whole pink-blue problem. And that in play, everyone is permitted. Boys and girls may play. There's something in our natures which say it's okay for little boys and little girls to play. But how they play begins to be different immediately. The other day I was on the boat observing kids, as I always do, and parents, as I do when I get a chance. A little boy about 3 and a half went running all over the boat. Finally, father resurrected him and rescued him, turned him upside down and was playing with him. Daughter, probably 5, pulled on his shirt and wanted to be held upside down the same as the boy. And the dad looked at her like she was out of her tree and said, "No, you can't do that." 3 minutes later, the girl asked to go only to the John. And father says, "Your mother will have to go with you." This is 3 and a half and 5 and a half. And this is typical in the early growing stages. Girls are kept in the house, boys are let outside of the house, particularly in the past. I think the present, there's much more mixing and matching. And the difficulty with that is therefore our sex role expectations. Girls can play, but when it gets to sport, maybe. Also, if they don't learn it by 9, and are able to have been taught the same way as boys, they are not going to be able to succeed as readily, nor perhaps with as much interest. Boys can hardly say they're not interested, and that's one of also our gender problems, that boys aren't allowed at 5 to say they'd rather play with dolls or that they'd rather play the violin. And it's perfectly cute for a girl to want to play the violin and not to play in sport. And so our whole sexual expectations interfere with sport. And moving from sport, which I call competition at a level, where it takes some degree of skill, as opposed to just game playing, which is sort of in between play. Play is my favorite. And that's one of the values, I think, of this place. Kids play. They just simply play. They don't have a ball and a bat and keep a score. And I do have that story, if any of you want it, which applies to sport as well on keeping score. It's really tough for me. I'm a physical educator, trained by men, and been in men's sports most of my life. So what do you suppose my original view was? Sweet play with dolls or competition? Competition, the same as the whole society, and that's why I'm mostly in blue and only my pink sock is left. Because my whole life really follows a male model of life until the bedroom. Definitely not the kitchen, however. And so, because sport is now so central to our lives, I see it as the whole life of the child is affected by the concepts of sport, not just the sport life. And when you move from sport to athletics, and my definition of athletics is really highly skilled, highly organized, what was sport. And I put that into both pro, professional sport, and amateur sport. What do you think I do with the Olympics? They're leaning heavy over here in the pro ranks. But all your interscholastic, your varsity, your little league, I put into athletics. And that athletics really should not be for everybody. It should not be for all girls. It should not be for all boys. It should be open to them, but not a requirement for manhood that you have competed in a highly structured sport. And one of the best books I know of about this is a book called Every Kid Can Win. Unfortunately, the bookstore wasn't able to get it, but you can order it from a Nelson company, and often if you live where there are universities, it's in the university bookstores. It's all over Canada and England. It's Canadians who wrote about it, and what they're writing about really deals with the problem of little boys who do not want that highly structured sport and what has happened to them as they are forced into sport. And then in an experiment in Vancouver, British Columbia, with a soccer team in which it is mostly skill teaching, skill development, and not a competition. They mix and match the teams, both boys and girls, with for half the game you're blue, half the game you're pink, half the game you're yellow, white, and so you never know what the score was because you're mixing all of the teams. And that the kids loved it. The first year, interestingly enough, it almost didn't work. By the second year, more and more children joined it, and the book talks and interviews with little boys, particularly on the effects of that. And then they found boys who had also been in Little League and tried to show the differences between soccer and the baseball, where all eyes are drilled upon you when you're up to bat. While in soccer, really only the goalie has full attention. And almost always, the goalie's self-esteem, confidence is high. And therefore, he or she can counter any difficulties that arise as a result of this. So when you deal with athletics, I think it can be separated from sport. But as I see the whole important area of physical activity, it is the fitness dimension. And it's the totality of fitness that I think sport can bring to a child, but it can ruin particularly his and soon to be her life as the girls do become a part of the male model. Unfortunately, we're not making boys a part of the female model. The movement education moves, the new games, which I think is an excellent book, by the way, that they have in the bookstore called New Games, which tries to take away from the competition and put into the cooperation in the process. And I think it's an important kind of element. So then, those are the terms I'm using. When I get to sex role expectations, and now they're using the word gender gap and gender differences rather than sex role expectations or expansion or whatever. As you think of it from your past, give me a picture of the female in terms of sport words or sort of value words. If you want to be describing a girl what you see or have seen as girls and what you have seen as boys, and you're telling somebody on Mars who simply, or on Pluto, who simply has no differentiation except reproduction between the male and the female. How would you say some of the stereotyping we've done is about girls and boys? How do you see them as you look around, as you probably raised them or watch others being raised? What are some things that seem to be feminine or seem to be masculine?
Girls jump rope.
Okay, girls jump rope, and what are the boys doing at that moment? They're playing ball, and they're probably playing it competitively. The girls are jumping rope with songs and not counting how many times. They may play where they're out and come back in, but mostly on three jumping rope, they're not really keeping any kind of score. And it really follows in the tradition of girls as well as low organized societies. The lower the organization of society, such as primitive society, the less complicated their games. Consequently, girls fall lower than boys, so their games are less complicated. And jump rope is a perfect example of that kind of activity. Why do boys now jump rope? Okay, strength and endurance and fitness. And it brings that, by the way. And it's great for the girls that they're doing that in instead of playing house on occasion, because it's one of the very best activities. It gives you strength, aerobics or cardiovascular efficiency, some flexibility, some coordination. So it's a great activity. But the reason for doing it, as you're explaining her jumping rope, and she's doing it with five people and the guy's doing it alone and he's doing it vigorously. But it is a great activity if you're inside and you have a ceiling high enough, by the way, for you. How else would you?
Roller skates.
Okay, and who's doing it?
Girls.
Okay, originally girls. Who's doing it in the upper age bracket?
Men,
and they've moved into the spinning and the pulling around. And what they will do is take their roller skates and turn it into a wagon or turn it into some other kind of equipment rather than straight roller skates. The girls get the roller skates first, and the boys figure out some other way. But again, it's a non-competitive activity. As the boys join it, they're seeing how fast, how far, how soon, which is our competitive sort of thing. How else would you describe them? Not necessarily a sport term.
Boys are aggressive and
oh,
it's good.
Boys are aggressive and it's good. If you have an aggressive boss, it's great. If you have an aggressive woman,
she's pushy
and chubby and consequently, it's a derogatory sort of remark. Have you read anything on whether that is true, that boys are by nature more aggressive?
I've heard that 90% of all crimes are committed by men.
Okay, violent crimes.
Serious crimes, violent crimes.
Increase in women, by the way, as our socialization process stays.
I only have two as examples, but boy, my boy is different than my girl along that line.
I think they're finding that boys are slower to develop academic skills.
Okay, how about the aggressive? Is it by nature that boys are aggressive?
I think my family is backwards for what a generation ago we were supposed to assume boys and girls were. When my son was six, he asked to take piano lessons. And he proudly went out and told the biggest bully in the neighborhood, "I'm going to learn to play the piano." And my daughter, when she was about six, started gymnastics, and in 6 months was asked to be on a competitive gymnastics team. And not really realizing that I was treating them opposite, I just tried to treat them what they wanted to do. And I think that now that my son's 13, he has become more aggressive, and I don't think it's a good type of aggression. because it's not his nature.
Our studies show that in societies in which women are to be aggressive, and there are some primitive societies. In fact, every social behavior pattern that we have, another society, it may be few in number, has the opposite, and that's exactly therefore how the girl grows or how the boy grows. The only behaviors that are only one sex besides the reproduction process is the behavior of large game fishing or large game hunting and large fishing. Those have, in every society, always been male. And that fits because they needed what males have almost 50% more of, even with effort, and that is strength and being able to use power. Power and speed are the two characteristics of male that on the average is greater. There is no other trait, behavior pattern that is one-sexed, which gives the tremendous influence that our society has. And those that are able to counter, cross-sex their society has been girls more than boys. Boys have suffered. What are they called? Sissies. That is absolutely the worst term in our society, as I see the freedom of boys and men. Because with the word sissy comes all the other stereotyping. You can't cry. You can't grieve. You can't get as many hugs, and they don't. All the depriving that we do of boys, we really don't do that much depriving of girls. Is it as bad to be a tomboy as a sissy?
No,
not at all. So the freedom for girls all through our society has been much greater, particularly since 1890. Around 1890, when education became important for boys and for girls, and when the new woman arrived who became a career woman, now mostly single, but not all, a whole new thought process, and the push for suffrage changed and freed the female in the sports world as well as in society. It's an incredible thing to watch, that whole period of the freedom that women and girls have in sport. And that's why you have all kinds of examples of women who have been role models in the Olympics that are just now coming forward, that dared to do that. You don't have those same examples of boys who dared to be nurses in the 1890s, or even teachers. What percent, even today, of our elementary teachers are women? Any idea? Yeah, between 80 and 85%. And as I throw in, what about principals?
Oh, I bet that's changed.
It had been 80% men in the junior high and senior high. Elementary had been about 70-30, but still men who came from physical education, of course, and became the elementary, which affects that whole role model concept later for the girls. The problem with the girl is she then begins her menstrual cycle and she's 13. And she's been playing with the boys all along. She's been free to do a lot of activity, and suddenly the pressure of, what's the first comment mother and grandmother and the neighbors say? It's time now to be a lady. And so suddenly you are to cross off much of your sport, and you have to then, not so much now, but you've had in the past to pick out then what it is you're going to do. And the sports that you're going to do as a lady?
Tennis,
swimming, if you're rich,
volleyball.
Golf, maybe volleyball, but volleyball's getting suspect because men are playing power volleyball. And that was not a sport that originally was what I call an elite sport. And my historical studies are showing me that what we call feminine sports, thereby acceptable, probably where the elite sportsmen did. They did golf, they did tennis. Even basketball, women have snuck into basketball by changing the rules. And you know, nobody cares that that's a game that we used to call basketball. And now that it's moved to be almost identical to the male model, there's much more question about women's basketball than some of you may knew your grandmothers played it in the 20s. I mean, if you want to call it basketball. There's three different divisions. If you're in the East and if you're in Iowa, two divisions. And they're taking it to court right today about the six-player game. But it was acceptable because it was learned at Wellesley, Vassar, Smith, Mount Holyoke, all of the women's sister institutions. And if they did it, they were the rich, and so it's okay. So I sometimes almost laugh when we talk about sex-appropriate sports, and I think they were elite sports. Why do women play field hockey? And we're probably going to get a gold medal in field hockey. Eastern colleges, brought over here by a woman, Constance Appleby, who lived to 108, by the way. And men could care less. They didn't play it. And the women of Philadelphia wanted to play this and have tea and crumpets afterwards. It was all right with them. And so it became a sport for women. And hardly any men play it. So in the sex role kinds of things, you can see how our society has decided more than our world has excited. But remember, even today, those 13-year-old kids, girls particularly, who have moved from tomboys to young women, have a very difficult time if they really still wish to be in sport, because an added dimension has been put in the way of the female. They've put Amazon, jock, lesbian onto the problems for the female. And that has detracted from the whole process of the freedom of sport. But we've got tons and tons of studies to demonstrate homosexuality has nothing to do with sport. The 4 or 5% that are going to be homosexuals are going to be homosexuals. And they may happen to be in sport and tell the world. But the fact is we got tons of nurses and all the kinds of fields for women. There are also, by the way, and we can document, many men homosexuals in sport. But nobody stops the men from hitting each other on the butt in sport as a part of the socialization process. I mean, that's about the only place they can have that kind of affection. And that's one of the positives of sport, by the way, is the camaraderie that's permitted for boys, that particularly these days, it's even worse. For their freedom to be buddies because we put this whole other dimension sort of in the way of it. But aggressiveness, which was our point, I almost remember now, is not gender defined. We define it. If your little girl roughhouses, and we found it with interview after interview with kindergarten teachers, that the little girls cannot roughhouse without being naughty. The little boys, what is it?
Normal.
Oh, natural. Normal and natural. I mean, we've got to give a little freedom here. For the girl, we are going to stop her and we're going to hug her when she does right. And so the female learns the importance of obedience, that it will bring rewards. Boys reward for attention, in particular grades 1 through 3, comes from being naughty. Little girls who are naughty are simply not nice. Little boys who are naughty are just cute as they can be, just a little vigorous and hyper. And it really becomes important in the school system of how you get girls to obey and how you get boys to obey, and that they don't cross-sex them. Much more praise for the girl and harsh looks. And for the boys, the attention of doing it as wrong as you can. And that's one of the academic slow things. It's really in vogue, even for first grade boys, not to be academically quick. The girls want to please, and that's where we learn it, you know? We want to please on up and up and up. My problem was I wasn't willing to please enough, I guess. I'm just in the wrong generation. I really was born into this new generation, and I had to find a husband in this old generation. And we didn't quite get that cross-sex reference very well. But I think the future is much brighter. But by talking about the past, I think it helps us see some of the ways that we can sort of deal with that.
I'm a first grade teacher, and I don't see that at all. So I'm just wondering, is that just because of my own attitude, or
what? Right, or behavior patterns, or applying what you have learned through the years on treating them the same. It's just a fortunate happening, or it may have been a purposeful one 10 years ago, where you saw the difference. Now, we can go into younger and those that have had sensitivity training in only gender, and you don't see it. Although you slip back now and then and say you're acting like a girl or you're acting like a boy, or be a big boy, never be a big girl in the tear scene. And actually, you know, we're also finding physiologically some way the second grade boy is just full of problems. He seems to get more diseases than does the girl. He seems to be absent from school more, more stomach aches, more problems. And we're looking at some of the gender identification problems that we've put upon these little boys. And it tends more to the uncoordinated boy than the coordinated. When will the uncoordinated boy catch up if he doesn't catch up in second grade? It's really scary for those of you, both as parents and teachers, that you help them to be coordinated but not losing their self-esteem by their physical activity, because it shows more than their academic. You know, they can get rid of not being able to read almost until fourth or fifth grade before their peers really realize it. But immediately their peers know in second grade if he can't catch a ball. And there's more second grade boys, if they're trained equally, that can't catch the ball because of being more far-sighted. That's one of the things that seems to be in the slower growth patterns is a more prevalent farsightedness, which may affect the reading readiness point. Besides the lack of concentration that boys, by virtue of their freedoms, seem to have. That they simply, boys are not as ready for first grade, and it may be the social setting that made them not ready. That their freedoms, and so it's more difficult to discipline them, as opposed to anything physiological. We're finding identical kinds of being with, say, the 2.5-year-old on. Now, the girls does grow faster in terms of her capacities. She talks sooner, and we do have some evidences of that early year. And more boys die than girls die. And so the girls are stronger early. More colds, more infections for boys, and we don't know exactly how the chromosomes therefore play upon it. But in the physical well-being, from about 2.5 on, there is no difference in leverages, in actions, in the whole physiological growth process, in strength, in flexibility, even in the balance that originally we said was for girls. That the boys just don't spend as much time some way balancing. Although there may be a left brain, right brain difference, and we haven't got that sorted out if you've been dealing with left brain, right brain on the female and the male. But in every other characteristics that we've been testing, that we can test taking away the social, and it's, you know, it's pretty hard to take away the culture, we're finding the exactness. So, for example, moving from the sexual expectations to the reality, those of you that have worked with, say, first graders, how many more boys throw farther than girls in throwing?
In what grade? First grade.
First grade or even second grade?
80%.
80% of the boys, and it may be as high as 90, are throwing farther than the girls. Why is that happening?
They throw more.
Absolutely. The only reason... And the University of Maryland, where I am, have some of the most progressive studies going on gender. One of our human developmentists is a specialist in children to five. And she's got their walking patterns from the moment she practically goes in the grocery store and says, "Can I have your kid?" if she sees them just barely walking. And so we've been testing them on their gait, filming them for, do they look different? Do they move different? There is a difference in the elbow to the wrist. And does the difference in the leverage, which is supposed to be helpful to the throat, does that make a difference? And by our calculations, we find that on the average, the 8-year-old and 5-year-old is throwing 43% greater, the boys, than the girls, which would bring out that 80 in they're averaging it out. There's only a difference because boys are slightly taller and their leverage is different, a 3%. So the difference is not muscular, it is not leverage, it is experience.
What about fine motor skill?
And the fine motor skills, the girls do better at it, but we think it's concentration and effort, that it doesn't have to do with the coordination. Penn State is doing something on that, the fine motor skills, because the teachers are telling us the girls are better. But the throwing is farther. How about running? What percent of the boys are running faster in those grades? Any idea? Is it the same 80% or less?
I think less.
Much less. And why might that be?
They can do it by themselves.
Girls run whether it's okay to run or it isn't. They do run. Kids follow each other and they run. The other factor is, remember, the strength factor can be the greatest for the legs. And the girls are using their legs. And so consequently, that's only about 20%. So I suppose it would be 40% of the boys that are running. Balance is, in fact, in favor of the girls. And by the difference in what's going to be the center of gravity, which even that, either we're changing or they have more sophisticated ways of testing, you know, and who knows which. They're finding that balance is in favor of the girls, and it's negative in favor of the boys. And that's why gymnastics is, in fact, probably easier for the girl. And if any of you have tried to teach cartwheels to third grade boys, and every cotton picking third grade girl can do it, it's one of my favorite things to do, because the girls can all do that. And think of the frustration of all the things that the boys sort of do better. I think that's part of our education, though, that boys will.
Men's gymnastics doesn't include balancing.
Yeah, right. And our men, we combined our classes, as Title IX said we ought, and there wasn't a guy that could deal with the balance beam, and we had to pay someone to come in and deal with the whole, well, really the whole beauty of the action. Even in the diving, the ballet would help the men, but that's a stereotype activity, modern dance. How many men do we have in synchronized swimming? And in our schools, we're really trying to, even if we do combine the classes, we're trying not to put one against the mother. Wrestling versus synchronized swimming. Now I ask you, what are the boys going to choose? Or modern dance and wrestling.
Yeah, I teach in high school, and it's really interesting in the weightlifting classes, now that they have been made co-ed and with the universal gyms and things like that, the boys have to really be in line first to try to get in there, because the girls have an opportunity, and nobody thinks, oh boy, are these tomboys coming in there at all. It's just it's the fitness.
And that's where the physical well-being helps the girls to be willing to do that. Once we dispel the myth that you're going to get big muscles. And what I'd really like to do is take all the bodybuilding things they're putting on TV for girls and women off the TV. Because it's a false premise that they are going to get large muscles. They're going to proportionately get some muscles as the males do. But even if they lift twice as much as they did a year ago, measure their girth, and a man who's done the same thing's girth, and the woman is less than half. But if you start pulling the 300 pounds, you are going to get definite muscle definition. Ballet women do get definite muscle definition. But that's a continuous action. It is not something your children are going to get from any activity. And once we can dispel that, because we're so worried about masculine and feminine, and that's not all bad, then we can use the well-being as, and that's what's happening in aerobics, that's what's happening in a lot of the other activities, that we're really dealing with the girls where they are, and that's where the high school girls are. One of the problems, if you've been dealing with co-ed, is that lack of experience of the past in throwing. And by the way, you can't teach. What we're finding is that men who teach their daughters to throw, even if they say, watch me, that they still tend to have their role models women, as boys have their role models men in sport. So consequently, you've got to find some woman that throws right. To be absolutely sure. Although what can help is making the child aware that she ought to throw exactly as daddy throws.
Can I mention something? The way a girl carries books and the way a boy carries books. A girl will hold her books like so, and a boy will hold them on the side.
Yeah, true. Just from the experience of the right arm dominant, that and the boy will carry it with however he throws the ball. That's the arm. And the girls don't have that same experience. Anybody on fourth graders? Have any fourth graders? Watch fourth graders sometime, because that's when they try to do co-ed activities and they're already far behind. If you've tried to teach a girl to throw. If I throw with my right hand, what will the boy automatically do with his legs? Which goes forward? Left. Automatically, almost. Because he's already had it. The fourth grade girl, half of them will throw like that. And it's not really the arm, therefore, that's wrong. It's the leg. Just try throwing very far that way. They'll try to bowl that way. And it simply is they have not been attentive to what's important to little boys by our society's ways. Now, the whole difficulty of all of this is that transfers to all of our activities in life, and it separates males and females in almost all areas. Furthermore, what we're really finding is the problems that women are having in their lower backs, in their arthritis, in almost all of the diseases of the female. From the brittle bones to the bone marrow to the density, those women were not physically active as children, and those that were are not breaking their hips, as I mentioned the other day. They are not breaking their arms when they fall. And it comes from that bone marrow that's stronger, the calcium has been built up. And we're finding in skeletons, for example, ages ago, the ancient skeletons, not of the Egyptian women, because they had a very sedentary life. But when we can get them from primitive societies, we can't tell the difference between the male skeleton and the female skeleton, which must mean they both were physically active. And we can also find the same arthritis in the rich Egyptians. The pharaohs and those kinds have all kinds of arthritis in their joints, the same as the women. And those men, according to our studies, really were not physically active. They were taught to swim, but they didn't have to do military. They watched the belly dancers, they didn't do it, and on. They were spectators, and it shows in the skeletons.
Even in the primitive people, like the shape of the pelvis and the tip of the sacrum?
On some of them, they can't tell the difference. Even though they are physiologically different, but it must also have to do with physical activity in the bone densities. Now, when they can put all of the parts together, our pelvises are different. That's why our gaits are only slightly less effective. But the more studies they're doing of our great sprinters who have started a long time ago, and certainly our black female sprinters, they don't have that same tip. They have some. And there is a difference. But what happens in the arm and shoulder girdle, and why we progressively get worse, is that after the onset of the whole menstrual adulthood cycle, females' pectoralis major and minor muscles are different. And then there is a difference in the arm and shoulder girdle. And no matter how much we train or weightlift, we never reach more than about 60% max of a male, while our legs can get up to 78% to 79%. So you can see the importance of that physical kind of activity. So what we expect, sort of, what you ask is what you get. And what it does is inhibit, you know, the kinds of freedom, I think.
Has anybody done any studies to see if there's any correlation between the idea that we're having smaller families now, so maybe I have two daughters, or I have only one daughter, and so that men are doing more kinds of physical activities that they would have done with sons now with daughters because of the smaller size of the family, because there aren't the sons, they aren't having sons, they aren't having, like, the three girls are off here doing this, and I'm taking the four boys are taught the men kinds of things. I've always wondered if that is beginning to make a difference.
I don't know if that makes a difference, although since we end up with the same number of men and women in our society, someone's having those girls. Maybe they also get a boy in between. But there is a big difference if it is a boy in the sibling order makes a difference in whether girls are in sport or not and physically active and successful. If they have, the boy is the older, there is more chance of the second to be physically skilled if they are close in age. If they are 3 to 5 years difference in age, then the influence of the male doesn't seem to impart upon the female. While if it's opposite, that oldest girl is not, has not had as much physical activity or is not as highly skilled. So we know there's some kind of sibling influence, but I don't think one has been done there. The greatest influence, by the way, on female athletes is that their family encouraged it. There is hardly a great female athlete from 1965 and earlier who was not influenced by some single member of her family. So you can see the importance of the role model, and particularly for females there. For males, the role model in sport doesn't seem to be important. Society says that they are a part of sport, and so they are a part of sport in the gender differences. Moving from there to some of the academic, just very quickly, the achievement orientation of male is far higher than for female. The expectation of what they will achieve in the academic, in the social, in the physical, and I should have added in the workforce. And that's where, therefore, the female in sport also doesn't have that same high achievement level. Now, that's both a negative and a positive for the male. If his mind runs that in order to achieve, he must be physically fit, he must play sport, he must move into the sporting social circles, while the female in the non-social, that it begins to be important. He doesn't achieve early, but the female by high school has suddenly either become dull or the boy has suddenly become bright. And what our studies are showing, of course, is neither. That the female simply, the expectations are lowered, the standards are lowered for her, because 50% of the female still will not go to college, will not be concerned even about graduation, although a larger number of females are graduating from high school than males at the moment. Their expectation is still not high academically. What are the two areas that they really begin to fall in?
Math.
And math anxiety is a reality. A federal grant 3 years ago really dealt with that whole math anxiety and all the little girls that could do math until sixth grade. And suddenly, computerization, engineers, even medical doctors, all the things that need some kinds of math, suddenly doesn't fit for a nurse. Even the physical therapist doesn't need as much. the teacher doesn't, and so the expectation is lowered, and suddenly she hears, you know, that her mom can't keep the bank book balanced. And now that's where, by the way, that left brain, right brain, they're still working on that. Maybe there is a spatial understanding that interferes, but not a logic that interferes. And that women are better in literature has no base at all in terms of the creativity.
On the spatial thing you just mentioned, I just took a class that said a lot of the spatial business is wrong for girls, and they haven't developed it because they did not play with blocks.
Yeah,
it was just part of their.
Taking little kids and doing that too.
And
even in the sports world, the space of how much you cover between first and second base, the whole sports field is spatial when you think about it. If I'm going to cooperatively be in a team sport, there's something about passing ahead, the give and go, all the things that boys get automatically. It still, a lot of things go back to team sport and the cooperation effort. But the space thing is almost like the physical. Well, if all these little boys are 40% better, 80% better at throwing, obviously it's innate. While in fact, the behavior together with the attitudes change it. But the spatial thing, they're still trying to deal with whether there's something different in the left and right brains that the physiologists and the neurologists are still dealing, which goes to that fine motor skill, whether there's something in the fine motor skill.
Well, this gal had taken a study on reading three-dimensional kinds of things, and even adult women are very poor at that.
Yeah.
And I agree, because I can too.
I agree too, I can. Yeah. Well, I was definitely female in the academic circles, all the way to trying very hard for the world not to know I was doing my homework. I remember distinctly hiding my homework because I was taking physics and chemistry and whatnot, not to do that in the first place as a female. But certainly then you can't study too. And I remember distinctly trying not to do that. And a lot of the studies are showing that that's true. That's why an awful lot of women are going back to college, because the potential was there, the interest was there, but the guts to buck society simply wasn't present. And the easier course of action was to go with the flow and get the husband through college. The next problem is self-esteem, and that's where in sports it really matters. And that's where you have to think about your boys and what you're doing to them in the sport world. That self-esteem, because of that rite of passage vis-a-vis sport, is almost central to a little boy's life, unless you decentralize it and de-emphasize it. That you want them to have self-esteem, whether they can chew gum and walk at the same time or not. It really isn't significant in your total life as long as the body is active. But what we're finding as we're clocking second through sixth grade physical education classes, the fatter boy, the plump boy, the uncoordinated boy has less playing time than even the quiet girl is having. By standing at the end of the line, by when it's time to go ahead and receive the pass, getting out of the way. So they're getting less movement time, even as low as the second grade. And that the self-esteem for boys, for better or for worse, right today, is built around physical ability. And that you really need, both as teachers and as parents, to work on it to help them, but at the same time find something that they can do. All average boys and girls, even hearing impaired, eye impaired, that they are coordinated enough to learn a sport or a running activity, and with jogging, that there is something that those kids can do. But it just takes longer to learn it. And so parents and teachers just have to be more patient. And it's important to be patient, because we can't change the world overnight. We can't say, get self-esteem, it doesn't matter. Because in fact, they're gonna live with their peers all along. And the same on the opposite extreme for the female. The female loses self-esteem with her greatness in sporting activities. And so it has to be built up that's okay, that's good, that's great that you can do that, and let's get Mary Jane, your friend, to do it, so when you're both 12, you'll still play. Because if Mary Jane won't play at 12, then I won't play at 12 either. And so the peer becomes more and more important. And it really needs to be done before 9. But remember, any child can learn any sport who is within the range of normal between 9 and 12. Any sport you want to teach a kid, you can do it from 9 to 12. You don't even have to start at 3 and 4 to make them Martina on the tennis courts. And in fact, there's some swimmers that are starting at 12 that are now very near or on the Olympic team. So there is that great potential. So self-esteem, confidence is wrapped up in sport. Values are wrapped up in sport. But remember that we don't build character in sport. We build evil kids in sport the same as anywhere else. And that's where my plea comes about the Little League. That what we are building is a whole society full of kids who do not see fairness as the number one value system within sport. The good guys come out last in sport. And if they can get away with it, they will. Their coaches help them to really cheat in sport. You see it on TV all the time. Pulling the face mask is not nice. It is not within the law of football. Have any of you watched a game where they never had any pulling of the face mask? If you watch football at all, you know what happens. In baseball, you look for the shin bones and go after them. And they're teaching that in Little League. Watch what's happening in organized youth sports. Because the values of our society are having the same difficulty in sport as they are in all other parts of society. And the whole confidence factor, if your boy is told you may play outfield only for that 3 innings because that's what the rules say, think about the experience that he's having out there. In the first place, he's having about 90 minutes of seconds of activity, and most of it was running out to that field as a little leaguer. And so be careful of this organized sport and letting kids into organized sport. Because then when you go down into this cooperation and competition, we're into competition. And this scoring thing is a terrible hazard. I'm very competitive myself. I was really raised in a competitive kind of element. But I see my willingness, even as a female in the 50s, to cheat in basketball if they got in my way. And I spent lots of time in church, which had a complete separate world. There was no value in church that was to be translated. If you don't believe it, look at Notre Dame. That's to be transferred here. So don't automatically think as you send your kids off that you're making sportsmen out of it or that you're teaching them and building character. You may really be developing a nervous wreck, a kid without self-esteem, without confidence. And now as we bring the female into the male model, the same thing can happen to the female. And she's less prepared for it because she has a failure syndrome in her head. And so if she tries it and misses, it's almost worse than the boy because she thinks in her head, well, I shouldn't have tried it in the first place. And then she will give it up sooner. If any of you coach girls, you know they'll give it up sooner. Until the spark is lit by somebody sometime, and then they are competitive. Then there's no one that can call them less aggressive or less competitive. And again, that's the male model. My hope through the years was that we could have a meeting of the greatest part of the girls' play and the greatest part of the boys' play, and we had this neat middle. Well, obviously I hadn't looked at power structures. We aren't. We're going to merely have girls having to adjust to the male model of sport. And there I think we need to be a little careful. And in the Little League, I think we need to be very careful because of what happens in that value system. And the physical well-being, if we're going to have healthy adults, males and females, we need healthy playing children. We have all kinds of evidence of that for all of our diseases, including all of the nervous diseases, and particularly for women. Women are having longer lives, but physically not necessarily more abundant lives. And that comes partly from their lack of activity as children and in their earlier years. A lot of it you can make up for, a lot of it you cannot. And certainly the joy of the sport, of learning it and learning it well, comes best between 9 and 12. All of us can learn it. We're learning, senior citizens can learn sport. And all of you can learn to do a sport. But you do have to have more patience now. And if we can teach it to the kids, so they're playing something besides the Trinity, baseball, basketball, and football, for all boys and girls, there ought to be something else. Remember, they're not going to find a football team for free out there after high school. They're not going to find even a basketball team, particularly if they played football, because now they have bad knees. And so you're going to have to find some other activities, and I think that that's really important. I think also in the appearance, that you can go ahead and use for girls the appearance factor of what sport does in a positive sense. But in the whole weight control realm, any of you dealing with teenagers or college women, we're finding more and more problems with the sudden loss weight and can't stop it. Anorexia. It's almost epidemic proportions for females. And some of that comes by taking the normally plumper 10-year-old girl and starting on her about her appearance. It's much worse what we're doing to girls about weight in childhood than we are for men. If we give them proper diets and talk little about it and proportions as parents, it's a much better role than starting her thinking about her weight. Because as you and I know, particularly women, we don't stop thinking about our weights ever. And that comes out of that society of what is slender is beautiful in terms of the female and young. And the glorified youth concept, particularly for females, is really tough on the sort of middle group. It is for males too, but somehow or other they have all kinds of rationalization for theirs, and they're healthier on the age in a lot of ways than the females are. And maybe it's because they find things they can do. But the appearance is important. And finally then, the action. From all of this, what do you think I want you to do about it? Okay, change. And change is slow, but behavior changes come first. I used to say change your attitude and then your behavior will change. My wisdom now is change your behavior even if you don't believe in it completely. Then your attitude changes because you see it happening. And I think that's so true for your little pinks and your little blues. Just sort of blot it out and be sex blind, not only in the sports area, but sort of in all areas except the area of self-identification. And if they can have their own self-image, then whether they're boys or girls is not going to matter. They will become well-adjusted adults, and they'll know that they're female, and they'll know that they are male. You really don't have to worry about that. And we've got all kinds of studies to bear out that our crises and our identification crises of who we are comes by the pressures that society suddenly wanted women to change, and therefore men had to change. Not that little boys and little girls can't identify both their likes and their differences, but the freedom for both of them. That's sort of what we're trying for.